All right, welcome to Lectionary at Lunch. Our reading for today is Proverbs chapter 8, verses 1 through 4 and 22 through 31. This is one of the traditional texts, Old Testament lessons for Trinity Sunday, a very great text. So what I'm going to do is translate it, and as I go through, talk about a few of the translational issues, and then we'll talk about some of the big interpretive issues with this passage. So again, it's Proverbs chapter 8, and we'll start at verse 1. Halochok matir tikra u tevunatitain kola. Does not wisdom call out? And tevunah, and understanding, does she not titain give her voice? Titain, of course, is a call imperfect from natan. Verse 2. Berosh meromim ale darek beit netivot nitzava. Berosh, at the top of the high places or heights. Meromim is a plural from just a noun, marom, based on the root room, to be high. So at the top of the heights, ale is an older form of al. You see it in poetry and other older texts as well. So, by the way, so on the top of the heights, at the wayside, or at the side of the road, really, Derek, beit, you commonly know the meaning as house, but there is also another meaning for beit. It's the feminine form of bain, which means between. So between the netivot, between the roads. So we would say at the crossroads, nitzava is a nifal, perfect, third feminine from natzav, to stand. So at the top of the heights, by the way, at the crossroads, she stands or takes her stand, nitzava, talking about wisdom. Verse 3. Layad sha'arim lefi karet mevo petachim tarona. Again, layad at the side of the Sha'arim gates, at the mouth of the Karet city. Again, notice you're getting a number of unusual forms, both syntactically and lexically here, as is typical for Proverbs. You have a kind of a dialectical language used in the book of Proverbs, so a lot of strange lexical forms and syntactic varieties as well, and you're really seeing a number of them here in these first four verses. And Karet is another one of those. Karet means city here, and it's an unusual word for Hebrew. At the entrance of the petachim, at the entrance of the doors, Tarona, she cries out. This is from Ranan. Again, it's a call, imperfect, third feminine singular. Tarona, she calls out. Verse 4, Alekem Ishim Ekra Vekoliel Bnei Adam. To you, O men, Ishim. Notice that this is a very unusual, again, plural for the singular Ish. Notice it's the usual plural is Anashim. You find this in two other places, Isaiah 53, verse 3, Psalm 141, verse 9. It's more common in Phoenicians. So here you have perhaps another dialectical form here. So to you, O men, I call out. And with my voice, again, you understand the verb call out. With my voice, I call out to Bnei Adam, to human beings. All right? So from there, notice so that wisdom is giving out her voice. And now we skip down to verse 22 and go through verse 31, which this is kind of the heart of the text. Yahweh kanani reshit darko, kedem mip alav me'az. Yahweh, now notice this word. This is from the root kana, kaf nun hey, and it means to possess. So Yahweh possessed me, all right, at the beginning of his way. Reshit, this is the same word, bereshit bara Elohim, and we would say at the beginning of his way. It's in construct with darko. Now, let's just talk a little bit about that word kana. Of course, the big issue here is how you translate it. Almost every place else in the Bible, it means to possess, all right? So you could translate, Yahweh had me at the beginning of his way. The Septuagint translates it as ketidzo, which, of course, means to create. And the Arians, of course, used this verse in their Christological controversies and in their heresy. I just want to point out to you that according to more normal usage, it means to possess, to have possession of. Sometimes means to buy or something like that. Also in Aquila, Symmachus, and Theodotion, the recensioris, the recensions, they translate it with the Greek word kataomai, which means to possess, ektesato, the aorist form. So they're actually understanding it in the same way, all right? For a real good treatment of the translation and the history of interpretation, Dr. Steinman's new commentary on Proverbs from CPH does a nice job just kind of giving you a brief, nice summary of the issues there. So again, Yahweh possessed me at the beginning of his way, before Mip Alav, before his works. Again, notice the root here, Pa'al, to do. So you add a mem to it, it becomes a noun. Before his works, me'az, from of old, me'az, from then, from long ago. All right, 23. Me'olam nisakti me'rosh mikad me'aretz. From eternity, olam. Okay, now nisakti is from the root nasak, and it is a nifal perfect, first common singular. Same word used in Psalm 2, verse 6, Yahweh installed me. And so here you would say, from eternity I was installed. Me'rosh, from the beginning, from the top, mikadme, from the top, from the kedem, from the beginnings of the earth, all right, from kedem, from of old, from, remember, kedem from before. Kedem means before, from before the earth. All right, so again, Yahweh possessed me at the beginning of his way, before his works, me'az, from then, all right, from eternity I was installed, from Rosh, from the top, from the beginning of the land, all right, and notice that the point seems to be made is that wisdom was God's possession in eternity. So what God has in eternity is something that, according to Proverbs chapter 1, people are to try to possess and retain. That is wisdom. All right. And again, he goes on in verse 24. Be'ain tehomot cholalti, be'ain mahyanot nikbademaim. Be'ain, in their not being, so that's bait plus ain, in their being no tehomim, no depths, see, so when there was, and notice all these are kind of temporal, when there was no depths, cholalti, I was brought forth. This is from the root chul, and it's a polal form from chul. Chul means to writhe or to twist, and very often it means to writhe or to twist in while giving birth. So here's the polal form. I was brought forth. So when there was no tehomot, I was brought forth. Be'ain, when there were no mahyanot, fountains, mahyan, when there were no fountains, nikbade, heavy with water. That nikbade is from the root kavad, and notice it's a nifal participle plural in construct with mime. So when there were no fountains, heavy with water. Verse 25. Beterem harim hatba'u lifnei gevaot cholalti. Beterem, before the mountains were sunk. This hatba'u is from tava, which means to sink down. This is a hafal, perfect, third person plural. So before the mountains were sunk, before the Gebaot, the hills, before the hills, cholalti, I was brought forth. That's the same form as the previous verse of polal. Okay. Ad lo asa eretz vechutzot verosh afrot tevel. Again, ad lo, before, see, or when there was, before or until not had he made the earth. And the chutzot, chutz means outside, and in the plural form it means something like fields, all right? So until not, we would say that ad lo, before he had made the earth and the fields, verosh, and before the this is a plural of dust, And it probably is talking about quantity, the large quantity. And before, again, you have to understand the verb he had made, the large quantities of the dust of the Tevel, of the earth. All right? Verse 27. Bahakino shamaim sham ani. Behuko chug al pene tehom. Again, here in that bahakino, it's from the root kun. It's a hifil, infinitive construct. So it'd be hakin, all right, or hakin hakino. So in his founding, so when he founded the shamaim, when he established the heavens, shamani, there was I. Bechuko, that's from the root chakak, chakak. And again, it is an infinitive construct. In his chakak, decreeing or inscribing the chug is the vault. So when he set down the vault over the face of the deep, tehom, verse 28, Be'amtzo shechakim mima'al. In his firming up, this is a piel infinitive construct. Amatz means to be strong, so the piel means to strengthen. In his strengthening, or when he strengthened or made firm the shechakim, the clouds, mima'al, above. Ba'azoz inot tehom. Again, hear that azoz is another infinitive construct. This time it's a call. From the root azaz, double I, and it means to be strong. So when the inot, that's fountains again, when the fountains became strong, so when the fountains of the tehom, when the fountains of the deep became strong, verse 29, besumo la yam chuko, again another infinitive construct from sum, call infinitive, in his setting for the sea, his decree. So when he set for the sea his decree, umaim lo ya'avru piv, and the water, ya'avar is to pass over. So again, this is a call imperfect. And you would translate, notice the, when he set for the water his decree, so that the water, I'm sorry, when he set for the sea his decree, so that the water would not pass over, transgress his word, his mouth, literally here, peeve. In other words, he set boundaries for the sea, and the sea would go no farther. Okay, again, the end of verse 29, Bechuko Moste Aretz. Again, Bechuko is a call infinitive construct from Chakak. In his decreeing or laying out or setting down the Moste, the foundations of the land. So notice that Solomon is making this point that wisdom was with God before creation. And so that, again, argues, you know, the whole context that kana should not be, I created wisdom as part of creation, but before I created the world, in eternity, as he says, God possessed me. And notice the point is made throughout all these verses that before all these created things came to be, there was wisdom. And notice he makes that point in verse 30 especially. Va'ehye etzlo amon. Va'ehye is from, of course, haya, call imperfect, vav, consecutive, first common singular. I was next to him as an amon, as a craftsman, a master craftsman, some translate. Va'ehye sha'ashu'im yom yom. And I was, okay, now notice sha'ashu'im means delight. And notice it's a plural because it's intensive. All right, and yom yom is a distributive, day by day. So, and I was his delight, sha'ashu'im, day by day, day in, day out. Okay, mesacheket lefanav bekol eight. Mesacheket is a piel participle, feminine singular, because wisdom is, of course, the subject. Sachak means to rejoice. So I was his delight day after day, rejoicing before him, bekol eight, at all times. Eight is time, okay? Again, you have the repetition, verse 31. Mesacheket betevel artso, rejoicing in Tevel, the world, Artso, his world. So notice you have Tevel and Eretz here. as synonyms. I was rejoicing in the world, his world, or rejoicing in the earth, his world. V'sha'ashu'ai, and my delight, against, notice that word, and my delight was in B'nai Adam, was in human beings, with the sons of men, literally, but human beings. All right? So notice that that is a beautiful passage. The question, one of the questions that you want to think about as you're working your way through the text is this an example of personification? Namely, by personification, we mean an abstraction, a kind of a figure of speech, giving concrete human qualities to this abstract idea, chokmah. Or is it referring to a hypostasis, that is an actual divine being? All right. Now, it's possible to make the case, of course, that this is personification, and some Christian commentators say it's personification that, in a sense, is an anticipation of what's going to happen in the New Testament with Christ, who comes incarnate as the Son of God. All right? It doesn't mean that those commentaries deny the Trinity or deny who Christ is as true God and true man. All right? But if you take a look at how the New Testament reflects on and reads this passage, the interpretation seems to be, from their perspective, that they're interpreting this passage as an actual hypostasis. So, for example, we read this passage within the framework of some of these New Testament passages, and let me just recall them for you. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, of course, we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a scandal and to the Greeks foolishness. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. All right. And again, of course, the famous passage in John chapter 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. All things were made by him. And without him was not anything made that was made. Again, a lot of people connect, and I think rightly so, that passage with the passage in Proverbs that we just read, that I was, in verse 30, I was next to him as an amon, craftsman. So notice that there is agency there in that word amon. I was with him as a craftsman, or next to him as a craftsman. I also want to call your attention to Colossians chapter 1. Verses 15 and following, where it says of Christ that he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created through him and for him. Again, notice that that seems to be a reflection on the last part of our Proverbs, where it says that not only was chokmah here in Proverbs, wisdom, God's delight day after day, but also he rejoiced before him all times, and he rejoiced in the world, and his special joy was in human beings. So notice you get the sense there that God not only created everything by Christ, but also for Christ. Again, a deep theological truth that seems to be expressed by Paul, reflecting his understanding of the Proverbs passage. Listen also to Colossians, same book, chapter 2, verse 3, speaking of Christ, in whom Christ, namely, both the Father and Christ are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Again, another very important passage there for helping us to reflect on this Proverbs passage and what it means for us. And finally, Revelation chapter 3, verse 14. And to the angel of the church of Laodiceans write, these things says the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. And so notice how the New Testament talks about Christ as the one through whom and for whom God created the world, just like this Proverbs passage does. And so I think that it is appropriate and proper to understand what the author of this Proverbs passage is saying as referring to a hypostasis, an actual divine person. And so that it's saying even more, saying it even more strongly than that just the author is making a personification of wisdom here. And, of course, for preaching, that has some huge, it gives us a trajectory to go, at least in your preaching. You don't want to so much explain the Trinity or try to explain that doctrine as to talk in such a way as the person and work of Christ and what he has done for us in his salvation receives the glory for people. Okay? Thank you very much.